Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Game two between the Predators and Canucks coming up tonight. And to help us talk more about that, we welcome in our friend Adam Bingen to the program on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Just building a house of blocks over here.
Nice. Very nicely done. So, Adam, obviously a tough 12-second span there for the Predators where they went from being up 2-1 to down 3-2 in game one. What stood out to you about game one for the Predators, and what's your confidence level that you'll see a response for the Predators moving into game two?
I would just like to say that if Predators fans are upset about two goals in 12 seconds, imagine being an Islanders fan today, two goals in 9 seconds. They blow a 3-0 lead. They lose 5-3. It was bad. It was a tough watch if you're an Islanders fan. So at least if you're a Predators fan, one team had it worse than you last night than you did two nights ago. But when I think about game one, you know, I wrote about this a little bit for a story that's going up on Sportsnet.ca this morning. JT Miller was a man on a mission in game one. The Canucks absolutely, as Arlo makes his monster truck noises. The Canucks absolutely dominated play with JT Miller on the ice. Scoring chances were 10-3 at 5-on-5 in favor of the Canucks. Shot attempts were 23-11 at 5-on-5 in favor of the Canucks. Now, Rick Tocchet says he wasn't trying to match JT Miller against Michael McCarron. It was just the fact that Miller starts periods for the Canucks and McCarron often starts periods for the Predators, but they took advantage of that matchup, absolutely. So that's one thing that stood out to me and something that the Predators are going to need to correct. The other thing is they need to get their big guys going. I mean, that top line at 5-on-5 was neutralized. Now, they did combine on the power play goal, but at 5-on-5, they did nothing. Roman Josi had one shot on goal in nearly 27 minutes of ice time. That's not the perils of being a dad in the morning by yourself. I just think that, you know, and UC Saros, of course, did not have a good game. I just think all of those things combined, the Predators almost won the game. So if they can tighten some things up, I think they could be in good shape tonight.
Okay, so beyond the obvious, okay, Forsberg has to play better. Saros can't let in soft goals, et cetera, et cetera. Is there an adjustment or maybe a little bit under the radar player or line that you look at and say, okay, that has to be a lot different in game two than it was in game one?
Well, I don't know if I was surprised, but when I went back and looked at the box score from the game earlier, Luke Evangelista led the team with 5 shots on goal. I thought he had a pretty solid game for his first NHL playoff game. So I think that if he can, you know, build on that, that would be helpful. I think they should try to get more ice time for that Sissons and Zucker combination. Of course, they scored the goal, the first goal. But, you know, you've got two experienced guys on that line. You know, Novak had his first NHL playoff game as well the other night. Thought he was okay. But I think if maybe they can get that Sissons line a little bit more ice time in this game, I think that would be helpful. But really it just comes down to the fact that their top players performed and yours didn't by and large, in that game. And like I said, the fact that all of those things went wrong and they still almost won. I mean, I would take that as, you know, some form of confidence that you can build off of, some momentum.
Adam, what did you make of UC Saros' performance in game one, and how big do you think the rest of this series is for him in terms of his future, the goaltending decision for Barry Trotz, all those things?
I heard what Jared said the other day about UC Saros and whether or not – I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry, guys. Okay, come on, baby.
I want Arlo's announced.
I do too.
Yeah, Arlo is upset about something. I think he wants a Band-Aid. I'm not sure he actually needs one. but anyway, I thought UC Saros did not have a good game the other night. I mean, he allowed 1.66 goals above expected. That's not good. You know, two of the three goals he gave up were screened. He's one of the worst goaltenders in the league on screenshots this season. So that's something that they're going to try to exploit. The Canucks, that is. Arlo is I'm sorry, guys. This is not great radio. they're going to try to exploit that for sure. You know, do I see it as like a referendum on UC Soros if he doesn't win this series? Not necessarily, but the record speaks for itself. I mean, like sort of like with quarterbacks, winning and losing is a goaltending stat, whether or not you like it. And the guy is 3-8 in the playoffs as a starter. That's hard for some people to reconcile.
You're talking about Soros and obviously that decision, which I think is central to, you know, some of the discussion here, and it's got to be something on Barry Trotz's mind. But I also wonder beyond that, like his summer, is it different? Door A, the Preds make some kind of a run. Door B, they get, just whooshed out of the playoffs by the Canucks, and it's a little bit like, okay, it was a nice, nice culture year. Some of those veterans are really good for the young guys, but there's a lot more kind of retooling needed.
Yeah, Barry Trotz doesn't strike me as a reactionary guy. And really, like we talked about before, and then I said this with Robbie when I filled in for you, Joe, the other day, that this season is already a success considering what expectations were at the start of the season. So even if they lose the series handily, I don't think you can, I don't think you should rush into anything, whether it's okay, we're ahead of schedule, let's add more veterans and try to compete faster, or well, maybe this, maybe this didn't work, let's make some other big changes. I wouldn't, I think Barry Trotz showed how calculated he was in his first year as GM. I don't think you can argue really against any of the moves that he made. Now, some people will quibble about Luke Shen, but Gus Nyquist has been excellent. Ryan O'Reilly has been excellent. He made the right move, so I trust him to continue to do that and not react to this series one way or the other.
Well, we'll see what happens tonight in Game 2. We expect Arlo's analysis at 6 a.m. tomorrow with us on the program, so make sure he's ready and dialed in for that.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Usually
he's pretty good when we're on the phone, but he's very upset about something this morning.
Well,
it's probably the Hines take that Jerry has. It's probably
it could be. Adam, thanks for being
probably.
With us. He's gonna be, right, guys, Adam's going to be with us every Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock throughout the playoffs, so looking forward to that. Adam Vigan, our guest here on Robbie and Rexo. We'll react to what Adam had to say. Take more of your thoughts on our text line. People all over Rex Road on the text line, by the way, about his take in the Rex rant.
Well, I think more people are agreeing, but there's a couple vocal disagreements. And sometimes the loud, the small group of loud people get a lot of attention.
We'll have more to say on that front coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Heiser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Nashville's best deal of the week is Joyland in East Nashville. Joyland is a fun new concept by Chef Sean Brock designed to spread joy through his love of cheeseburgers, shakes, buttermilk biscuits, fries, and fried chicken. Get half off a $30 Joyland gift card now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals and enjoy the best burger in town. We're taking your thoughts on the Preds and Canucks, the NFL draft, on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Caleb in Mount Juliet on the text line says, I have lost all faith in Soros. His size is an extreme disadvantage for him in the playoffs. Demko looks like a freaking tower standing in front of the goal compared to Soros. It's time to put in Askarov and see what he can do next season and be willing to not make the playoffs next year if that's what it means, but definitely have to get bigger. This is from Caleb in Mount Juliet, who is out on Soros for his size.
Little Soros, little UC, you're out of there, buddy. Well, look, I get it. I mean, we said the stat yesterday of the goalies in the playoffs. He has the worst save percentage on far away shots. I don't know exactly how that's exactly determined, but far away shots, and some of that can be maybe you got a little bit more body to cover a little bit more than that, that helps you. But
it's not great through screens either, which I think also kind of plays into that.
And his numbers there are not good.
Yeah, he was one of the worst goalies in the NHL in save percentage on screens. So, I mean, that does – it's not – size isn't everything there. But when you're a bigger guy like Pekka, it didn't take very much for him to look around a screen because he was 6'5", and you could just peer your head over the top of it. So it does factor into that.
Yes. Now this makes me want to search up Vingan's Twitter account because he had that stat, I think, yesterday too. And by the way, texture pointing out that the crying was louder from Arlo when we mentioned Jared, but I'm pretty sure he had this stat on his Twitter account yesterday about the screenshots. Now I'm trying to scroll through it, and it's just like Simpsons GIFs. My gosh,
I've got it for you, Joe. If you really, really want to know,
yeah, do it. I want it. Yes.
So from the regular season, out of goalies that have played at least 10 games, I believe it was started 10 games, but played 10 games, Saros ranked 63rd out of, I think it was 72 goalies. In terms of what he had in terms of goals allowed when once he was screened. So, yeah.
He had an 863 save percentage. Yes. Put that out there yesterday, which was 63rd out of 72. So not very good.
No. So there you go. So there's where the size does matter in a bad way for him. But, of course, and this is we've talked about this, but I think it bears repeating whenever it comes up. His size also, he's a little – you know, he's a explosive athlete who gets post to post, and that's why he's been so good. The question is he, because he has to compensate for the lack of size with that, is he falling off the cliff earlier than some goalies as you get a little bit older, get into your 30s, and you're not as explosive athletically? I mean, that's one of the things you have to talk about. If you're the Preds, when you're making this decision about who's going to be your goaltender for the long term.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's a more explosive goalie than Pekka was. And Pekka's a pretty explosive goalie, right? Like, but Saros is more explosive. And, you know, Pekka obviously had a huge size advantage. You know, Askarov's a big guy. That's another thing that's got to factor into this. I mean, look, I mean, the Saros, his response tonight and in this series, I think is a big deal. And again, it's not everything when it comes down to the decision. But, Jared was talking about this yesterday, too, and I do agree with this to a certain extent. Like, at some point, UC Saros has to be a main reason why you win a playoff series, right? And it's unfortunate that he wasn't in there in Colorado. They would not have won that series had he been in there. Maybe they get a game. Maybe they get two. Probably not. I mean, they were just so outclassed in that series. He played well in Carolina, but Carolina was a better team than the Predators were. The Arizona bubble series is the one where I think the Predators had a better team, and he did not play well in that series. Now, again, that's, you know, there's so much that went into that stupid series that it's hard to really even judge it. But the bottom line is, like, at some point, if you're going to commit to him long term, it would be nice in the back of your mind not to just think that he can steal you a playoff series, or to think that he can steal you playoff games in path to winning a Stanley Cup, but to have some, you know, some evidence demonstrated that he's done it. It would be nice to have that if you're Barry Trotz. And again, like, is UC Saros good enough to win a Stanley Cup? Is UC Saros a good enough goalie to win a playoff series? Yes, he is. There's no question about it. There's so much more that goes into it than just the goaltending part of it. But at some point, like, you need to see that translate to actually getting it done in the playoffs.
Yeah. If you're going to move on from what has been a tremendous value contract for him, when frankly he should have been paid more the last few years for his performance, but if you're going to move on to a top shelf long-term goalie contract, it would be great information to see him, like, win this series, you know? It'd be, or even to just win a game, you know, and you go to seven, you go to six or seven, and you got there because he stepped up tremendously. To me tonight, but the rest of the series, it's just huge in that regard. I don't see how it could be. The more I think about it, it's just like, what other information, you know, is more valuable than a player with all of this pressure and all of this on his shoulders, when you have an alternative that you could still, Saros could play great and they could win the series, and you could still choose Askarov for financial and cap reasons,
for
and
sure,
it would still not be a bad choice, you know? might be a lot easier to make that choice if you just get an underwhelming Saros performance in this series.
Well, there's a texter, I think, that brings up an interesting point. I mean, he says, look at the first round games. Has any goalie stolen a game yet? The game has changed from 5 or 10 years ago. And that's back to the larger philosophical question of this whole thing that we've talked about so much is how much money is a good goalie worth? Like, is it worth investing that much money in a goalie? And we all know goalies important, but how important is it, right? Like, you know, the story of the playoffs so far has been goalies not getting the job done rather than it has been them like stealing games, right? Like, you know, Georgiev in Colorado is terrible and they scored 6 goals the other day and lost. Like, right. That's been more of the story so far in the playoffs. Like last night, you know, Jake Oettinger and the Stars, they're playing Vegas in the first round. I mean, you look at what Vegas was able to generate last night. I mean, what'd they finish with? They finished with 15 shots on goal. I mean, Dallas held them to 15 shots, and they scored four of them. So right now, I mean, it's a different game than it used to be. And that's kind of what we were talking about last season when it was a really hot topic of debate on Saros. But that still comes down to, like, the money committed to that position moving forward, would you be better served? That part of it still doesn't change in terms of the discussion point of it, regardless of the way Saros plays, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you can flip this around and say, well, if Colorado flames out and loses to Winnipeg, then, boy, they're going to wish they had a goalie, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like and that's where the Saros thing, it's like, do you commit that kind of money? You may not, either way. Do you need good goaltending to win a Stanley Cup? I bet you whoever wins it gets some really good goaltending along the way.
Agreed.
It may not be the superstar Vasilevsky model, which, by the way, not long ago worked to win a cup, but
yep.
We've seen, I mean, look at Vegas last year, right? They sort of did it by committee, but they played really well.
Correct. I mean, you need good goaltending in the playoffs. That point is not, I mean, there's no debate there. The question is, can you get good to elite goaltending for enough period of time without having to pay the elite goaltender? Like, that's really the question moving forward. More of your thoughts on the Preds. We'll also get into the NFL draft coming up as well. 615-737-1025, our phone number. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. I got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see the Pixies and Modest Mouse at Ascend Amphitheater coming up on Sunday, June the 2nd. Be caller 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025, caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to see the Pixies and Modest Mouse at Ascend Amphitheater on Sunday, June the 2nd. Taking your thoughts on the Predators and Canucks, game 2 coming up tonight. Got a texter, Joe, that says, I know tonight isn't technically a must win, but am I the only one that kind of feels like the series is over if they don't take at least one heading back home? We've talked about this, Joe. So they have, I think, so Keyser came up with this, I think 4 times in their history. And again, not that history is a predictor of the future here, but I believe they've gone down 0-2 and have come back and tied the series 2-2 at home. So, I mean, including cup final, right? They went down 0-2 in Pittsburgh, came back, tied at 2-2, and then it's a best of 3 after that. So we have seen the Predators a few different times throughout their history go down 0-2, tie it back up at home. Now, we've never seen them actually win the series in that scenario. So it feels like from that standpoint, tonight is important. Look, we know this. If they're going to win this series, Joe, at some point they're going to have to win on the road in Vancouver. So I had them splitting the first 2. I actually had them losing game 1 and winning game 2. So we'll see what happens on that front. But it does feel like tonight's game, if the Predators are going to win the series, is pretty darn important. And the odds would tell you that it's very important for them to win the game tonight.
Yeah, it's huge. Again, it's just like the difference between, okay, you got the one. That's kind of the goal for every road team in every 7-game series. See if you can get one. And then you just have a new, you know, you've got a 5-game series with you now having home ice. Or you have to win 4 out of 5 against the team that that just beat you twice. So it's there's a pretty massive difference in probability of winning this series based on tonight's outcome for sure. Point made to me, by the way, on the goalie thing. Let's even look at, you talk about goaltending and its importance. That Thatcher Demko save on Beauvillier on the perfect Evangelista pass early in that
game.
You know, that's the kind. And you know, Saros did not have a save like that in the first game. Now
he did not.
You know, I think credit to the he was solid. I did think that he did a good job of controlling rebounds pretty well on some shots where, you know, that could have definitely been a fat rebound here or there. I thought he did a good job. He was solid, except for one goal that he let in.
Yeah.
But, you know, Demko, for whatever. Yeah, I mean, Demko, you know, you've got a really good screen on the Zucker goal and power play goal with, you know, just
great
a
job
snipe.
By O'Reilly.
Yeah, I mean, so he didn't give up any softies, and he had one incredible save. So, you know, if you want to, you can boil game one down to the one goalie was better than the other.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I said it yesterday. If they're going to win this series, and certainly if they're going to put together any sort of playoff run here, UC Saros has to make the saves he's supposed to, and he has to make a few that he's not. That's what it comes down to. Like, if you're gonna win this series against Vancouver, you're gonna have to make some saves where you're not supposed to make them. I mean, we talk about saves above expected all the time. You need to be, you know, probably in the 5 or 6 range throughout the course of this up there, and he's not there right now. He's not really been there all season. So, you know, I think back to 2011, and look, 2011 when they played Vancouver, that was Pekka Rinne's kind of coming out party to the rest of the league in terms of, man, this guy's really good. Now, that 2011 Predators team was way more outclassed by that 2011 Vancouver team than this Predators team is by this Vancouver team. So keep that in mind. Like, Pekka was awesome in that series, and he was the only reason they ever had a chance in that thing because of how good he was. I don't think this Vancouver team is that team, and I don't think this Predators team is as bad as that Predators team was. So, I mean, you hear Adam Vinga talk a few segments ago. Like, you can view it this way if you want to, if you're a Predators fan. Like, you had Philip Forsberg play really poorly. You had Roman Josi not make a huge impact on the game. You had Saros let in a goal he had no business letting in. You had a tough time generating offense 5-on-5, and you still were in position to win the game in the third period. So if you want to, like, you could view it if you're a Predators fan of, well, you correct a few things today, and you're going to have a pretty good chance to win. And we'll see tonight starting in game 2.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I'll go to the Vancouver side, and they can go down a list of things they can do better too. But, yeah, I mean, look, what you want to see if you're the Preds, if you're a Preds fan, is, like, you want to see your team at its best, you know? So that would be a big thing tonight. I heard, you know, a lot of conversation yesterday. One thing I heard that I personally disagree with is like Josi criticism for the first game. I thought he was good. Like, he can do
more. I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was good. I thought he was okay. I thought he was fine. He wasn't a problem. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he, you know, even, I mean, it's subtle, but I mean, it was, he just has a feel for setting people up. I mean, he set up Zucker on that goal, you know? I mean, it was just a little. So, I mean, he still, to me, made a lot of plays out there that gave them opportunities. Yeah, sure, you want more from him. But the problems, like the problems were, you know, basically Forsberg and Saros, yeah, and then, you know, Carrier, that mistake, right? And those are the three things that, yeah, can you take away huge D-zone mistakes? It's easy for us to say that. It's a, you know, I mean, that team puts a lot of pressure on you. They've got really good talent through their lineup, but can you clean up the mistakes? You can't make those mistakes. Can Forsberg be Forsberg? And then can you not let in any soft goals?
For sure. Like, they need more than one shot on goal from Roman Josi for no other reason. I mean, he's one of their best shooters. Like, he's, you know, he's not Forsberg. He's right out of Riley when it comes to just pinpointing the puck, but, you know, he scored over 20 goals as a defenseman. So they need him shooting the puck a little bit more.
Yeah.
Than he did in game one. But yeah, like, to me, Philip Forsberg was bad in game one. UC Saros was not great in game one. Roman Josi wasn't bad, but they need him to impact the game a little bit more offensively. And look, Vancouver is going to do everything they can possibly do to prevent him from wheeling and dealing in the offensive zone like he likes to do. They're going to do everything they could possibly do to keep him and push him either around the net or to the outside and try to prevent him from cutting to the middle. And, you know, we talked about this with Forsberg yesterday, but I think it's on him too. Like, you got to find a way, if you're Josi, to know that, to overcome that, and to be a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more effective offensively. Like, I mean, I will say, like, you look at Roman Josi's career numbers in the playoffs, and they're not great. Like, they're okay. They're good, but they're not great. And teams really do a good job of focusing in on him in the playoffs. And I do think he's got something to prove in this series in terms of finding a way to break through that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. He's had ups and downs, hasn't been all great. You know, speaking of that, focusing on him, you know, Quinn Hughes got, and I guess it ended up not being his goal.
Yeah.
But it was his play that created the goal. But I think the Preds did a good job of minimizing his impact in the first game too, other than that. But hey, man, if your impact is minimized and then you make that play to tie the game which starts this complete reversal, well, there, okay, well, what else do you need, right?
Right.
And with Josi, I agree, shoot more. Also, if he had that exact shot that he stepped into the other night, I bet you 19 times out of 20, it's in the goal.
Yeah, and it went right off the crossbar, and it doesn't even count as a shot on goal. So I mean, it's, you know, that's a chance that he had that was right in the middle of the ice that doesn't count that way. But you're right. Like, again, Josi, I did not have a takeaway in game one that Josi was like some problem for them out there. I just think there's another level that he can get to. Hey, look, and maybe we didn't discuss this enough. I mean, they were off 6 days. Like, how much does that factor? I don't know. Maybe it did. Maybe it didn't. But tonight, that excuse kind of goes out the door. You played 2 days ago, so if you were a little bit rusty, there's no excuse for that tonight in game two.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We also talked about the fatigue thing, the apparent fatigue thing. I don't know if anybody really addressed that. I didn't see anyone address that on the Pred side afterward. Again, maybe it was more just Vancouver's energy and execution was so good after they took over the game, after they took the lead, but you want to see more energy for sure, you know, in general, overall.
No question. Well, we'll have your final thoughts on game two for the Preds and Canucks coming up next. We'll also get some thoughts in on the NFL draft, which is 2 days away. All that coming up, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We're taking your thoughts on Preds and Canucks game two coming up tonight. Also, the NFL draft coming up here in a couple of days as well. Joe, real quickly, Johnny in Whitehouse on the text line says, I totally agree that Saros should be held to a higher standard than what we've seen so far, but why was Pekka Rinne not held to that? When Pekka was costing us games or series, we didn't give him any blame and instead blamed the team in front of him. This is from Johnny from Whitehouse on the text line.
Well, let me read
one particular game that stands out to me that was not the case at all.
Yeah. I wrote back to Johnny. I said, I remember my comment to Tennessee and after Rinne got shelled in game 7 against Winnipeg. I remember all the talk around town. If you don't think people were blaming him, lamenting his performance, I mean, that's just revisionist history. I mean, also, Pekka Rinne, the difference, though, is that in 2017, that run was built on his back, right? And that's what Saros hasn't done. Also, in 2019, you know, the deciding game 6 in Dallas to lose the series, he was incredible in that game. And the only reason they were in that game. So, I mean, Pekka Rinne had several star carry the team, stand on your head moments in the postseason. Saros has not done that to win a series yet. Pekka Rinne absolutely had his issues. I mean, look, game 7 against Winnipeg was almost hard to watch. And I give him credit because he stood in there afterward and took all the blame. But he deserved the blame. I mean, he's
bad.
Yeah, he was bad. That one goal from like behind the net or whatever, and it was like, this is not going well for him. So, you know, he had a mixed bag, but the idea that no one ever blamed him, that's not true. Just that he also had incredible success in the postseason. And, you know, what the Preds are trying to find out is if UC Saros can do the same thing.
Exactly. And again, the more information you can have on a goalie or any player when you're about to make a big financial decision and a commitment to them, the better off you're going to be. And, you know, this the rest of this series starting tonight, that's the number one thing I'm looking at tonight is how does he respond? How well does Saros play tonight? Does he stop the shots he's supposed to? And can he give you a couple of saves that maybe he's not supposed to? And that's ultimately going to be whether or not you win this series and how you judge a goaltender in the playoffs. Like that's what it comes down to this time of year. Joe, we are 2 days away from the NFL draft. We went through a couple of different scenarios earlier regarding some other teams around the Titans. As we're kind of settling in here to the first round of the draft, we've been talking about 1,000 different scenarios. It feels like we've been discussing this NFL draft for 3 years at this point. We're almost there. And the more we get closer to it, the more I wonder if the boring route for the Titans, which is Joe Alt at number 7, is the route that they're going to go on Thursday night. And we talked about the Chargers in front of them, the Giants in front of them. Could they kind of shake things up? Certainly Arizona at 4. But if things play out the way that most people think they're going to, and Joe Alt ends up a member of the Tennessee Titans on Thursday night, I think, number one, the reaction from most of Titans fans will be, okay, yep, I get it. And number two, then we're going to start to pay attention to if they get him and Joe Alt's the guy, the transformation of this team in one offseason, what's that going to mean for them immediately? Like, we know long-term, you're hoping that Joe Alt's your left tackle in the future, but I wonder about immediately next year. With everything they've done in free agency, let's say they land Joe Alt and he's pretty good at left tackle, what does that mean for this group immediately in 2024?
Yeah, well, I think if they get Alt or if they get Fashanu, but obviously Alt is the generally agreed upon best left tackle. If they get either of those guys, and I think you should expect that they're instantly solid at left tackle. Not saying great, and maybe they won't be great. Hey, maybe I'm wrong and they won't even be solid, but based on their performance and how they rate as prospects and the evaluation of them as prospects, either of those guys, Alt especially, but I think Fashanu is right there in terms of, like, he's ready to play at left tackle in the NFL. I don't see anybody else on this very deep tackle class. You definitely see guys who could be great. Maybe Latham could move over. Maybe Mims down the road could be great. Guyton, there's a lot of possibilities. But two guys who, like, right now you are ready to go into camp and you're a starting left tackle in the NFL, and you would expect either of them to be a lot better than the last two left tackles they've had. So, but if you're just talking Alt, yeah, I mean, I think you would just increase your chances of being better next year. I still would argue that if you had an opportunity to really increase your draft capital and address your roster more thoroughly, and maybe it's a little bit of a not as much help this year if you don't get an Alt, but maybe, you know, in 2 years you could be better off with more draft capital. I mean, I think that's why you have to consider that if someone comes after that number 7 pick.
I will say, though, let's say you got, by some people's opinion, the best receiver on the market in free agency. You got the best corner on the market, and maybe like the third or fourth best corner on the market adding to your group. If you add a left tackle to that, that's a lot that's different heading into this year. And look, nobody's going to pick the Titans to win the division, nor should they. I mean, the Houston Texans are and should be the favorite in the AFC South. But I do wonder, like, if these pieces start to come together, could the Titans be maybe a surprise team next season with how much different things look in one off season, and then, you know, factoring left tackle into that. I mean, it's a much different looking team if that's the way things go here. I mean, I'm looking at FanDuel Sportsbook right now, Joe, the win total for the Titans next year, 6.5. So obviously that's not a ton of expectation that people are going to have on them, but 6.5, like, if you get the left tackle with everything else you've done, like, could you exceed that if you're the Titans and get yourself into playoff contention?
Yeah. I mean, get a left tackle who's good, address the interior of the defensive line, get an edge, get an inside linebacker, get a veteran safety, have Nicholas Petit-Frere be solid at right tackle, and with all the other adds and all the other things they have in place, that could be a playoff team. I mean, I just went through quite a few things, but not like an impossible list.
Right. So we got a lot to get to on the program tomorrow. It's going to be a busy day tomorrow here on the show. Game 2 tonight between the Predators and Canucks. We'll have full reaction to that tomorrow on the show. We'll have Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com in the 8 o'clock hour, looking ahead to the draft, which is coming up on Thursday. So we got a lot to get to tomorrow on the show. Joe, looking forward to it. Stay up to get you a nap in today. Going to be a late one tonight. I think the puck drop is around like 9:20, so that'll be fun.
Well, I'd love a nap, but the Titans have a pre-draft press conference today. Thanks, Titans! No, just kidding. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, way to go, guys. That does it for us today. Chase and Big Joe up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.